Welcome to the Pilates Progressions Program. This is Katrina Foe, your host for tonight, and welcome to episode 101. That's right, we have over 100 episodes now, so if you haven't listened to them all, please remember that there are tons of different topics that we have covered, and honestly, I don't think we have covered very many topics more than once, and the ones that we have usually is a different aspect of it. So feel free to go back into the archives and listen to them because they're great if you want to download them on iTunes and put them on your iPod or something and listen to them while you're driving or doing cardio or whatever you need to do that you can listen to something. It's a great way to learn and get questions that you may have answered or learn more about other types of clients that you may have in the future. So remember, you can always call in live, and the number for that is 347-838-9945, or you can email me your questions. Tonight we have quite a few questions that have been sent in because we took a little break. We were out of town, and I just wanted to say for those of you that I saw over the break, that was awesome to get to see you. But I want to jump right into the questions because there's a backlog of them. So just to let you know, if I don't get to your question tonight, I'm going to keep it in the queue, and it will be worked on in the next couple weeks. So please bear with me. If something is urgent, let me know, and I'll try to bump it up, like if you're a sticky client situation that you need advice on right away, let me know that when you send the question in so I can make sure. But on that note, we are going to go ahead and jump in to some questions. So let's see. The first question it's got multiple questions, so I'm just going to take these. So first off, I'm so excited that I'm registered for POT Chicago. Are you going to try and make it to that one? Here's the list of classes I signed up to take. I would love any thoughts you might have on these. So first off, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to go to the POT Chicago this year. I went last year, and it was awesome. I was teaching some shoulder workshops and pregnancy, a ton of pregnancy stuff, of course. Here's what she's taking. She's taking Friday fascia-oriented training in the contemporary Pilates environment with Elizabeth Larka. And Fridays are usually all day. Saturday morning, low back pain and Pilates extension-based programs with Karen Clippinger. In the afternoon, movement is breath, beyond the mechanics, Madeline Black. Sunday morning, great groups and sensational semis with Sherry Berkowitz. And Sunday afternoon, a touch of classical mat with props, Valentine. So I think those sound like awesome workouts and sessions that you're taking. I know all of those instructors, and I think you'll enjoy all of them. Valentine and Elizabeth are particularly good at very creative choreography and really thinking outside the traditional box. Karen Clippinger is fantastic at getting through the mechanics and the detail kind of rehab-y stuff without making it too confusing and overwhelming. My advice there would be to make sure that you don't get too bogged down on the examples of exercises she gives and look for the overall patterns of what she's trying to teach you, because sometimes people get very focused on, I have to do this one exercise with this issue versus seeing that it's a big pattern. Madeline Black tends to be a little more esoteric, very cerebral, and usually has a very unusual look at things. And Sherry's great. I think you'll have a lot of fun in terms of practical aspects on how to teach those specific group classes, which is wonderful and very helpful. I highly, highly recommend that you go hear Ken's talk about Pilates history on Saturday night because he does a great job. And every time I've gone to it, he has new information to add. He does lots of research and is always looking at things like Joe's patents and different places Joe traveled and really obscure pieces of history that are really, to me, fascinating. And a lot of the information I have in the P3 program is from him in the history or, you know, from Lolita and different people that I've talked to, but a lot, Ken brings a lot to the table. Plus, he's just fun. He's just a hilarious guy. So go and enjoy him and have a great time in Chicago. Any of those other people that are going to be there, look for each other and have fun. But unfortunately, I'm going to miss out on that one this year. Okay, so another question she asked, she wrote, I noticed a trend now that I have two tall, skinny, mini female clients who are new to Pilates and so far don't like the equipment. They don't know each other and come separately to private sessions each week and start at about the same time. They're both having a really hard time feeling the right muscles. parentheses, despite being able to do a lot of the exercises when I take them through it, and despite the fact that I am adjusting the spring tension to make it easier for them. And I've taken a liking to the mat work. Have you noticed this trend with the specific body type? The majority of my clients really love the equipment, so I just found this really interesting. I would love your thoughts on this. I think this is a really interesting note, and I wonder if other people have had this experience. I have seen this. Now, I will say that I don't know if I'd call it a trend, but more like a tendency. I have noticed that people that are really skinny and have that lithe body type tend to be drawn to the mat and tend to have this difficulty feeling the right muscles. Now, this is not by any means all people that are skinny and things like that, but there is a certain clientele, and I don't know exactly what this is. Here's my take and what I've done with clients with that. Personally, first off, I give them the mat. Mat is awesome. Mat is very helpful for a lot of clients. However, I personally like to have the freedom as an instructor to be able to work on whatever I see they need. And I can actually see a lot more, especially in the peripheral extremities, meaning the arms and legs, not just the core, when I work on the equipment. So you can see a lot more things going on, a lot more muscle imbalances when you change it up and you have more variety to change it up with on the equipment. So to me, it's a little annoying as an instructor when a client says, no, I only want to do mat. And I have actually had a client that said they will not do equipment work, and it was really bizarre because she didn't really have a reason why. But that it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because it's like, no, you're not the instructor. You don't know what you need. I'm the instructor, and you're paying me good money for my opinion. Why don't you want it? I don't get that. But that's a separate note. That's my own issues, if you will. With this type of person, I tend to do the opposite of what it sounds like you were doing in terms of making it easier for them. I want to make sure that without hurting them, I can make it harder so that they can feel it. Okay, so hear me well. I don't want to hurt them, and there's certain exercises where if you make it too hard, you will hurt them. But there's a lot of exercises that I call sellers that you can make it harder for the client without the risk of hurting them. All right, so on the mat, an example of mine would be to do rolling like a ball. Now, if you don't do rolling like a ball with really good focus, meaning pushing yourself, this can be kind of a stupid exercise. But if you really work rolling like a ball, it can make you sweat. And I've had people find that. And this can be one of those that if they, again, a female is going to tend to have a lordotic back anyway, so I'm going on, you know, that probable tendency. Again, these are all big, huge stereotypes, so if you're taking this, you know, to work on a specific client with your own, you know, adjust as necessary. And rolling like a ball really gets into that deep posterior tilt, which is going to be probably somebody that's lordotic's weakest spot. And I want them to find that. I don't want someone to leave my studio without feeling something. And not necessarily they have to be walking funny the next day. I'm totally not about that. But I want them to feel the exercises in the moment, what they're working on. And to me, part of this is that you might be making it too easy for them. So, you know, I'll make sure they hold a really tight ball. I'll give them maybe some props to make sure that they can do it. So something like putting a small, like, triad ball between their forehead and knees, and say, don't drop the ball. So that makes them keep their ball really small and tight while they do a little like a ball. Things like that. Again, it depends on the person, what they can do and how flexible they are and stuff like that. So that's just a random example. Make sure that they get it. Make sure they don't miss the point of it. I find that there's a lot of people that also have the problem, or it could be a different problem, that they're really disconnected with their body. So they, for example, they can kind of make the right shape, but they're looking at the outside and they're not really feeling what's going on the inside. So a couple things can help with this. And this maybe for this specific body type would be great, but it also could be for a lot of other people that might just be, you know, a spaz or something that aren't connected with their body either. And it looks different on different people. But if they're not connecting with their body, which is really important, the whole point of Pilates, contrology, right? I want to, first off, do not let them look in the mirror. And do not ever demonstrate for them, because that will encourage this problem. So if you haven't already, listen again to the lecture on, I just lost the name of it, Learning Styles, week 9. Listen to that again, because I talk a lot about that and why that's important on there, and how it, you know, making sure that they're working auditorily can really help them get away from the external appearance of things. And that's a really key concept in Pilates. The other thing is I give them a lot of cues that make them check their body. So if I say something like, tuck your pelvis under, it's very vague, and it's like, sure, I think I'm tucking my pelvis, and there's no concrete measuring stick to see, did I tuck my pelvis under, did I not, besides the instructor saying, can you do more, or I think you have more, you're not really doing it, which is kind of a negative way of saying it, but you're having them rely on you for whether or not they did it, and then you're kind of handicapped because you don't know if they can do more or not, and if they're not really capable of telling, then, yeah, you're kind of stuck. So I focus more on cues where it's like, do it until this, and giving them a specific thing that they can feel, or we'll give them a concrete, yes, you did it, no, you did not. So let's see. For example, if they're doing round back on the short box, okay, I would say I want you to tuck your pelvis under so that you can feel your waistband touch the box. That's very concrete. Either you feel the skin sensation of that or you don't. And most people, that if they aren't connected with their body in terms of what muscles they feel working, they still can get a tactile skin sensation. So you can use that. Let's see, another example. Say they're doing pulling straps on the long box. Press your pubic bone into the box is going to be more concrete and measurable for them than lift your belly up. Is it lifted? Is it not? I don't know. You know, and again, that would be cueing them into a posterior tilt to get them to neutral in that position. So again, that technique could be used on any exercise almost, in a variety of different ways, but really look for concrete things that they can measure. And over time, when you give them that responsibility of feeling, did they do it, did they not, they're going to start feeling things better and being more aware. I've also noticed a lot of this in people that have surgeries. And again, this is a different topic kind of, in terms of, this probably is not what you're discussing, but it happens a lot with people that have maybe had abdominal surgery, whether it's a C-section or some kind of removal of a part, whatever. And there's the nerves have been cut. And so giving them the feedback of, you know, where other parts of their body are touching, they can start to feel things even though they don't feel the nerves, you know, working, you know, the abdominals in the way that a normal person would feel. And eventually that kind of nerve damage can be repaired. But they really have to put their mind to it and really have to be focused on it and continually checking in with their body and sending the message, fire, 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 you know, and eventually those nerves can and will regrow if they're worked on. But most people just kind of write it off as, oh, I had surgery, it's just permanent damage, it's done. But the body is so elastic. If you get no message from the P3 program, get this, the body is very, very dynamic, and it has an incredible potential to heal and change over time in a good and bad way. So use that power and harness it for your clients. Hopefully that helps and gives you some ideas. I have seen that type that you're talking about, and it is a little bit trickier to work with because usually they're completely out to lunch with what's going on, kind of like, and they just kind of look good doing everything, and you kind of feel like, what do I cue? Look for the ways to deepen it. This will be a great opportunity to deepen your skills teaching because you're going to have to find the details that they're missing to help connect them into their body. So when you're looking over the lesson plan that you want to do with them, whether it's mat or equipment, doesn't matter, think about how can I take them deeper? If they're in good alignment, what else can I cue them to do to make sure that they feel this? And that's going to, again, deepen your skills so much. A lot of times it's teaching instructors that really challenges me in a lot of ways because, or it's just the clients that kind of do it right naturally, if you will, because those are the ones that you have to struggle to figure out how to take them deeper. And those are going to perfect your cues and take you deeper as a teacher in a whole different way than working with people with, quote, issues. In a lot of ways, those people are actually easier because it's really obvious when they're not feeling the right thing because they're screaming and writhing in pain. But the other people can just kind of waltz through a workout, and a lot of instructors just let them and don't ever challenge them. And I say that that's going to not retain clients, and it's doing them almost harm because they're not getting challenged and they're not getting the depth that they need. So keep working on that. Okay, that's my inspiration for you. Okay, next question. She writes, I'm recovering from an abdominoplasty. I decided to get my diastasis fixed and get a tummy tuck. I know, crazy, right? The surgery was last Monday. The recovery has been pretty slow, and I have second thoughts. No going back now, though. Would love any ideas you have on the recovery process, as I am guessing you may have had some clients have gone through with or have considered doing this. I am hearing conflicting things about whether or not the diastasis could potentially come back or not. My doctor said it's solid, so that's encouraging. I have a few friends who have had it with a lot of success. I am nervous about teaching again since it will be several weeks before I can demonstrate any exercise. Okay, so I'm going to talk to you, but I also want to talk to other people who may or may not know about this surgery. A lot of this has to do with the specific issues going on. So a lot of times when people do decide to get a diastasis fix, there's also other issues going on. So there's hernias and such, which you didn't mention, but there might be there. I don't know. And then there's also the aesthetics, the tummy tuck stuff. So on the tummy tuck side, I have several clients that have had tummy tucks separate from diastasis. And let's just say fat cells do come back. Okay, so if you did it for an aesthetic to like, okay, I don't want to spend the time losing the weight and I want to just get the fat cells out of there and have a flat tummy, best choice because it does come back. You do still need to have, you know, the figuring out why am I gaining the weight, whether it's hormone imbalance, just eating too much, or a lot of times there's other compounding factors in there. And I'm going to guess it's not exercising because this person's a Pilates instructor. A lot of times if somebody has had a diastasis, there's other issues like the skin has been stretched so bad that it's really hard to get it in. And a lot of times that comes from having twins or triplets and things. So I do want to validate that that saggy skin stuff can be a really hard thing. Personally, I have a diastasis. Mine's almost healed, but I personally would not choose this. And I'm just going to say this because I'm talking to everybody, not just you, so I want to just be totally candid. I'm really anti-surgery because there's always side effects, whether it's the drugs that you have to go under or take to go under or the numbness or possible recurring pain or complications. There's always stuff. And so my prayer for you is that there's no stuff for you, okay? So hear that loud and clear. But I've seen a lot of things where, like you said, the diastasis can come back. Just like healing it naturally with exercise, the diastasis can tear away from the sutures and stuff. And sometimes they put things like mesh in there in hopes that the abdominal muscle and fascia will start to grow into the mesh. I've heard that the mesh in particular can be very uncomfortable when you start to do things like extension where you're stretching it because it doesn't stretch like normal tissue would. The biggest thing I've heard is that with the surgery, it does take a lot longer than most doctors tell you, and that I don't think this particular person just had a baby, which a lot of people have these surgeries right after they have a baby, but it's good to know that if you do it right after your baby, you can't hold your baby. And that to me is like crazy. I don't know why anyone would do that right after they had a baby. Like at least give yourself time to try to heal and allow yourself to bond with that baby and hold the baby and take care of the baby. It just makes such an extra burden on your family to have to help you because you can't even carry the baby because you're not allowed to carry anything more than like 5 or 10 pounds, which the baby probably will be by the time you get the surgery. Usually they don't do it until at least 4 to 6 months afterwards. The other thing is that a lot of women don't realize that most doctors will tell them if they have their diastasis fixed, especially if they use things like the mesh, they can't have any more children. They could, but they'll do some serious damage, or I'm not sure exactly what would happen, but that's a really big issue for me because personally, I would not want to limit that, and that's a big deal, and I think that's something you should know is going into the process. So when you are healing from the diastasis, first off, you have to give yourself time to heal, and you're going to have basically the same recovery process whether you had the diastasis fixed or not, meaning that you have to focus on your core and getting your core back together, because even if you have it artificially sewn together with surgery, you still need that core support from the inside, meaning the muscles have to be strong. Otherwise, you're not going to get rid of any possible back pain or whatever is going on that caused you to want to get it fixed. So you're going to be doing the same thing regardless, and you're just, you know, you're going to be doing it with some pain and discomfort. So just be aware of that. When you want to start slow, you're not going to want to do any rectus abdominis work for a very long time, just like if you had the diastasis not fixed surgically. And you're going to want to just really focus on getting a good core connection. The big thing is that you're not going to have the range of movement, especially in terms of extension. I've heard a lot of people talk about not being able to fully stand and sit upright because of the extreme flexibility you need in that area that's had surgery on it just to get to neutral. So that could be an issue. And having to work on getting that back, definitely go through rehab and get somebody that specializes in that. I know that's always annoying because people, you know, want to go to whoever's close and in their network and stuff, but go to somebody that's really good at this and knows what they've doing and been working on this a long time. And because you are going to want to teach again, it sounds like, which is good, you want to make sure that you get that full range of motion. And again, you may not ever get back that full extension, or I shouldn't say it, you will have to work like hell to get that back, because you've got fake parts in there possibly. And you may not have the mesh. I don't know how serious yours was or any details. So, again, I'm talking about all different scenarios, and I'm not sure where you fall on the spectrum, so I just want people to know if they have their clients that have that problem. And you probably already know this, but do everything you can beforehand, meaning that a lot of women, and this is probably not the person that wrote this question in, but a lot of women will just go to their doctor, and the doctor says, okay, we do surgery for that, and they say, okay, sign me up, and they don't ever look into it. So as much as you can, get the word out there that this can be fixed naturally without surgery, and you guys have the power to do this. You guys know how to get their core working and, you know, work in neutral for a while and don't do any rectus abdominis, no flexion exercises of the trunk. And I can't say enough how important it is for people to know when they're pregnant not to do ab work. No crunches, no flexion, okay? Because so many women get so neurotic when they're pregnant. Again, this is not what the question was about, but I'm just throwing it out there. They get very neurotic when they're pregnant that their abs are not going to go back to what they were before, and they focus on tightening the abs. And what the abs really need is lengthening and stretching. And if you get it too tight, what's going to happen? It's going to rip because it's tight, and that baby is going to push out. Lord willing, I hope that baby pushes out because it's going to get bigger, and that's a good thing. And so you want to encourage pregnant women to let that stretch open and lengthen, not have bear down on it. And most of the clients that I've seen that have had a diastasis, it's been a neurotic pregnancy issue. So, again, I don't know if this instructor had that issue. This could have been a long time ago. I have seen men have this, the diastasis, not the surgery. The men, it's much more rare, but, again, it can happen, and they do need to find a good core connection and everything. Usually it happens slower over a longer period of time, and it's really bad mechanics. And so this neurologically is harder to fix because of the bad mechanics than the quick onset with the pregnancy, you know, with multiple babies or, like my case, transverse babies. I did no rectus abdominis work, and this guy still ripped me open. It was about four or five fingers wide, and I wouldn't say super deep, but it was fairly deep. Here's the cool thing, and I just want you all to know about this. I have not, this is a little confession, I actually have not done very much work on mine. I know, that sounds crazy, right? It's like 14 months postpartum. I've been very, very busy with life with five children and all the stuff we have going on at our house and things, and have not done super a lot. I do obviously know how my core should feel and how to contract it, and so basically I just think about that as much as I can during the day, and that's the major thing that I'm doing. With that being said, I can do the rectus abdominis, the diastasis check on myself. And if I relax and don't think about my abs, I can feel it probably a good 3+ still open. However, if I focus on it and draw my core in and feel that, you know, bracing kind of scooping feel, I can get it to close all the way so you can't even feel it at all. And I mention that because if you're learning about diastasis, or if you have one, a lot of times you'll come upon the Julie Tepler stuff, and she just rants about Pilates and how awful it is, and no one should ever do the 100 because it's not possible to actually get a true transversus connection in that position and all this. It's not true. It's just not true. I have my bone body to testify, and I've seen countless others, clients, and even with a diastasis, I don't do the 100 right now, but if I do that test, I can close it literally by thinking about it or not thinking about it. I can feel the difference. I'm going to see if I can get a video of it and see it, that difference. But it may not show up on video because it's not super extreme anymore. I should have done it a while ago. But I just want you guys to know that. So if you have clients, and I've worked with a lot of clients with diastasis, ranging from, I think hers was, I've had two or three clients that is like 8 fingers wide, which is like, oh my goodness, your whole tummy. And those extreme ones, I've seen amazing results without any surgery. So it is possible. It does usually make you look poochier, like you're pregnant, which usually, especially if you live in Scottsdale, is a big deal in our society. So I don't want to make you feel bad for caring about that because it is an issue. But I also want to encourage Pilates instructors as well as just, you know, regular people just to be kind. It's not about how people look. It's about what they're doing health-wise, what they're doing in their life, you know, what they're giving back to the community. It's not about how flat your tummy is. And with all that being said, we still want a flat tummy, not because it's flat aesthetically, but because it means your core is really working. Now, whether there is a pooch of extra stuff on top of that because, you know, maybe you had too many chocolate chip cookies, that's a separate issue. And again, sometimes people's metabolism is off. Sometimes hormones are going wild. And let's just be honest, our food supply and all the chemicals that we're having dumped on us, it's hard not to be out of whack nowadays. So, you know, give each other some grace and love, and let's make sure we're not judgmental on other women. So I am supportive of you getting that surgery and just, you know, go through what I was talking about in terms of focusing on not rushing things, but just being very diligent on finding real deep transverse connection, which you probably know how to find that, which is such a huge blessing to you, and working through that slowly and thoroughly to get back that full range of motion, okay? Don't give up. You can get that range if you need it, if you want it. It's just a matter of hard work. Okay. Go to the next question. If you have thoughts or comments on that, please send them to me. I love your thoughts and comments. Okay, here, next question. The good news is that I have had time this week to finish recording all my hours, submitting my test out application to Balanced Body. Oh, congratulations. I think that if there's anything that has held me back, it has been that I can't remember the springs on all the exercises. I have really been pretty dependent on your cheat cards, although I love them. So while I'm recovering, I am writing out flashcards for each exercise so that I can try to finally get this. I am also studying the movement principles, reviewing anatomy, and watching lots of Pilates Anytime. Since I don't get to test out with you, I have decided to take a little break from the P3 program and focus on the Balanced Body manuals and videos. Do you think I'm on the right track? Any suggestions? Okay, so first off, you're so not going to get tested on the springs, okay? There's too much variability in how we would adjust the springs, they're not going to ask you that. Now, with that being said, when you go to teach, you will need to know the spring setting to use for that person. You need to know a baseline, and then you can adjust it. Okay, does that make sense? But that's not going to be on the written test. And most test out facilities, you're going to get to have the workout that you are going to teach ahead of time to look at, and then they'll give you, three to five exercises on the fly that you just have to kind of teach spur of the moment just to test your knowledge. So hopefully that'll help you with the springs. Usually people's weakest spot is the anatomy. Okay, so definitely go over the anatomy. One of my favorite ways to tell people to review it is to do cards like you're talking about, but make lists of it both directions. So list like the muscle, so say psoas, and then on the back of the card list the motions that it does. You know, so hip flexion, external rotation of the hip, adduction, you know, whatever. And then you can quiz yourself both sides. But also, this is actually one of the most applicable ways of studying for a test. Make a list of all the muscles that do hip flexion, for example. Make a list of all the muscles that do external hip rotation. Make lists of all the muscles that do adduction of the hips. And look at it from that aspect as well, because a lot of times when they ask a question, it has to do with looking at it that way, and that's not usually the way that people study it. Okay, so hopefully that helps. Honestly, watching lots of plies anytime, I don't think it's going to help you at all. I think if anything, it might confuse you. You're going to hear lots of interesting cues. You're going to see lots of different variations in choreography, which, again, can just confuse you. I would not focus on that. Well, I think plies anytime is awesome. It's a great way to do observation hours. I wouldn't do that studying for your test. I would go back, like you mentioned, and look at the balanced body manuals and the videos and go over those. The best thing to do is if you go through the P3 lesson plans, which it sounds like you use them a lot, and you could cross out all the ones that are not balanced body and just go through all those exercises and make yourself do them again. Go over the advanced lesson plan list of exercises of the ones that are not in there, because those, if you haven't done them, people always forget them. You know, sign up to take some private lessons with somebody that's been teaching a long time and tell them ahead of time. You can even email them the list of exercises you want to go over. That's a great way, because if you go over in your body, you're much more likely to remember it, because kinesthetically you've really embodied it. So for your self-practice, That's one of the main reasons that we have all those lesson plans, is so that you don't have these exercises float away from you when you go take your test out. I cannot tell you how many times I've had people sign up for a couple privates before they do the test out, and they come in, they've got like this list of exercises, and like, you know, I don't remember ever learning this in class. Did we maybe we skipped that? No, we never skip an exercise. We did it, and your brain was out to lunch, or you did it, and you loved it, and then you never practiced it since, and you've forgotten it, and that's 99.9% of the time what happens. So make sure you go through those. The movement principle information and those lectures in the manuals is huge. If at all possible, talk to whatever studio is near you, whether it's us or somebody else. If you took the modules with somebody else or if you've moved, talk to them and see if you can audit them teaching the movement principles again. That is an enormous way of studying for the balanced body test out, to really help you understand that stuff. And then those lectures. Go over those lectures with a fine-tooth comb. A lot of exercises come from those lectures. Okay, so hopefully that helps for anybody that's studying for the balanced body test out. And just remember, the balanced body test out is designed to be a learning experience. It's not designed to screw you over and fail you. It's designed to help you see what areas you want to work on improving to help your teaching become stronger, and to see if you're, you know, at a, you know, par level of, you know, where you should be. So don't hurry yourself to take it out, you know, take it really soon if you don't feel comfortable. And don't stress about somebody trying to fail you. They're not trying to fail you. They're trying to help you. So, again, they're on your side. There's no need for test anxiety. Just go in, enjoy the process, be relaxed, and I'm sure you'll do great. Okay, another question here. For the last few months, I have been attending a few classes in private at a Ramana studio that's pretty conveniently located to my home. This has been a totally different experience from the one I have had at the Balanced Body Studio that I also go to each week. I can definitely see pros and cons for both contemporary Pilates and the classical method, as Ramana recalled it. I have started spending more time studying the Ramana's Pilates, and I like that the workouts are the same no matter who is teaching you, so they all really expect that you'll learn all the transitions in a very specific way, and you can get an awesome flow. The teacher training program is interesting in that you have to know all the exercises and transitions before you even start the program. Meanwhile, at the Balanced Body Studio, where I've been taking all my teacher training, we do lots of different workouts, and my teacher there is extremely creative, and she loves to throw new creations of her own at us each week. On a national level, there are some fantastic classical instructors that have discovered on Pilatesology that have inspired me so much recently. I'd love to know more about your experience with these two schools of thought and hear any thoughts that you might have on this topic. As always, I love the contemporary Pilates instructors too. I completely agree with you. There's pros and cons to both. So obviously, I'm a little biased because I'm Balanced Body faculty. But it's kind of funny because the different times that I have been slotted to teach at the PMA, I have been slotted as a contemporary instructor and I have been slotted as a classical instructor. So what am I? Who knows? I think a lot of times I get slotted as a classical instructor because I was trained by Lolita, and Lolita is a first-generation instructor, and I've been deemed a master Pilates instructor by her. So I have that lineage. Now, what is classical? That's a whole other topic. We've talked about that before, but it's so politically charged. Usually when people talk about classical, they're talking about the Ramana lineage, and there's a lot of what you're talking about in terms of you always have the same order, you always do the same exercises the same way with the same transitions, et cetera. And depending on the school, whether it's Stott, who is from Ramana, Moira is trained with Ramana, or Power Pilates, which again, those people, Bob Likens and all them, were trained with Ramana and such. They all have a little different flavor and a little different take on it, and you'll see things. But, you know, that is not the only way that Joe taught. And Joe did not necessarily teach that way. So when they say classical, it's a little offensive sometimes to me because it's like, well, you know, I mean, I stay with Lolita and she has a different recollection of things. And quite frankly, I'm good friends with Michael and Tone, who were Ramana's teacher trainers for many years and actually worked at our studio for a while. And, you know, they've told me that Ramana has changed the order. It's not just one thing. So to say that that's the way Joe did it and that's the only way, it's not really true. But with that being said, I do agree with you that it's nice to be able to get a flow. It's also nice to get the creativity. I would just say take the best from both different styles and create your own, because it depends on the client that's in front of you what is best for them. And this is where you can really be a chameleon to what the client needs are, meaning you don't have to always teach every single exercise the exact same way with the same transitions, but you can. If the person really is needing the flow and that's where you're going to challenge them, go for it. Versus if you have a client with a lot of issues and injuries, if you can't stop and look at the exercise and say, this is not appropriate for this person, we're not going to do this, or how can I modify this for this person, then, you know, you're not really helping that specific person. So I would recommend to you and to anyone in the P3 program, which, experience both, enjoy both, take the best from both. And so whatever instructors you have around you, learn from them, take from them, grow, and develop your own personal style that, you know, you can become a chameleon based on what that client needs. Because that, at the end of the day, is what really matters. It's not about you. It's not about this exercise. It's about what the client needs, because the Pilates is supposed to be a healing modality to help that person. It's not just about doing it for the arbitrariness of doing it. It's about the person's body and helping them. And I think you know that, otherwise you wouldn't love Pilates as much as I do. It's a really wonderful thing. You know, Pilates can be just an athletic experience for fun and enjoy movement. It can be very therapeutic and healing. It's got so much versatility that it is unbelievable, and people, you know, always are coming back to it because of that. So there's lots of different... Okay, so lastly on that note, I just want to encourage people, again, to take lots of different lessons. And sometimes that's easier than others, depending on where you live and what's around you. But, you know, if you travel, say you go on vacation, plan a Pilates lesson in. Look for who's going to be in that area and who you could take with that maybe has a style or a training that you have not experienced yet. It's a great thing to do to enlarge your view as an instructor. That's one of the great things about the Pilates on Tour is that Balanced Body does not just bring in Balanced Body faculty. They bring in people from all sorts of schools, all sorts of trainings, and you can go and take with all of them. And I love it. That's why I love Balanced Body, because they're not just, you have to do it this way. They see the breadth and variety of Pilates, and I don't know how that's contemporary, but that's the pegging, is that because they embrace so many different things. So, again, you want to just look at it from a wide-angle lens. Okay, next question. This is actually isn't really a question. She wrote, "Hi, I wanted to send a little message to say that I love today's lecture and the list you sent with it. As a teacher, lesson planning was the lesson planner I was trying on my own to figure out how to organize this, and you have already done it. I love the idea of grouping exercises into lists for both learning and planning purposes. You just made my day with this tool." So I am so glad you enjoyed this. What she is talking about is week 7, the private lesson plans lecture, and how I was trying to help you guys understand how to create lesson plans and walk you through that. So I'm so glad that you loved it and that you enjoyed it, and it's a tool that you can use. So thanks for the feedback. And let's see, more questions. We've got so many of them. Okay. She wrote, "If I don't have the room in my studio area, can I use the short yellow springs instead of the long yellow ones for class number 13? I want to stand my clients on the tower platform, but the long yellow springs push them too far to the back edge, the footbar end, and it makes me nervous. My tower is about 6 inches off the floor. I'm not sure if I trust my clients up that high to do the exercises. What do you think?" Yes, you can totally use the short yellow springs. Again, that's just going to move you closer to the frame, and for that purpose, especially since they're up high, yeah, you don't want them right next to the footbar. That's a completely appropriate thing. A lot of times we use the long yellow because it's more classical. Again, what is classical? That's just the way people traditionally did it. There are some cases where you need the long yellow ones, but most of the time it would be absolutely fine, and that is a very good reason why you would modify it. So good job looking at that. Okay. My client has had 2 dislocated shoulders. I've talked about them before in regarding mermaid and bringing his arm overhead. He says he feels like his shoulders have gotten stronger, but his left shoulder still causes him pain when it brings it overhead. He wants to play golf again. During his backswing, he feels like his shoulder is going to pop out back. What can I do to help him more? Okay, well, first off, golf probably is not the ideal thing for him, but he probably doesn't want to hear that. And let's be honest, your job is to help him be able to do that. So I'm going to assume he's a righty, and when he does his backswing, he's taking it back over his right shoulder. Okay, so... again, not a golf pro right here, so I want to put that big disclaimer in there. If that angle is causing his left shoulder to feel like it's going to dislocate, then he's probably not ready for it. So what you want to do is really focus on getting the posterior aspect of the musculature of that shoulder a little stronger. So exercises where he is... working his posterior delts and such, It's going to be very, very helpful. Traps and lats and things like that, really to work on the back of the shoulder and that strength there. But again, those posterior delts are huge. And that's going to just kind of help strengthen that capsule. The rotator cuff itself, that external rotation of that arm, good one. So things like drawing a sword, you know, just a plain external rotation, whether you want to do it on the tower frame or the reformer, it doesn't matter. And I would really focus on working on the overhead motion. So we've talked on other episodes, you might want to go through the archives, on the upward rotation of the scapula. And I have a whole workshop on this. But if, again, if there's pain, that means something is not right. Most likely, again, this is a gross generalization. I'm making a lot of jumps here. So just know that this may not be your client. I'm making guesstimates because I have not seen the person. I've only seen a couple sentences. Most of the time when people have pain bringing their arm overhead, it's because the serratus anterior is not doing its job to help the traps upwardly rotate the shoulder blade. Okay, gross oversimplification of the whole problem, but that is huge. And so we get impingement, we get extra stress on the rotator cuff, et cetera, et cetera. And so I would work on that from a plank position. So you can start in a quadruped position, all fours, and do things like the sternum drops. Okay, and if he's winging, this is guaranteed serratus anterior problem. If he can't bring it up and flatten those shoulder blades on his back and then separate them in that abduction, again, that's a sign that that serratus anterior. Then move on to doing the plank position, the plank on the push-up on the chair without the plank, that exercise, absolutely so fabulous for something like this. The other thing I would do is work on elephant with him. Elephant is a sneaky way to get that arm overhead, and the relationship to gravity helps them get into it without the pain overhead. Most people with shoulder pain with the arm overhead do not have a problem with elephant. It's this bizarre thing. I think part of it's psychological, but part of it is physiological. So when they're there, don't even have them move the carriage. You can even slap all the springs on, just have them hold still, but focus on manually encouraging that upward rotation of that scapula and getting their arms straight, getting their chest shifted back like their chest is going to touch their thighs. I don't even care if their knees are bent and toes are up, any of that stuff. Just really get the shoulders, hands, thumbs by the fingers, knuckles pointed down, hands shoulder distance apart if possible. And then, and only then, I mean, and I would talk to them about keeping their elbows absolutely straight in case we're not locking, hyperextending, but we're fixing it so it's not moving. And then think of pulling the foot bar wider. Obviously, the foot bar does not stretch. That would be a really messed up reformer. But that motion is going to cause the abduction in the shoulder blades, which is serratus anterior. So you've got serratus anterior turn on, which usually they'll start sweating at that point and be like, oh, my goodness, this is a lot of work. Not pain, but work. Then, and only then, are they allowed to move a few inches. Again, take the springs off if you slapped them all on, just have it on the red and blue. And again, it's about the in. It's about maintaining those shoulder blades wide and keeping the elbows straight. About every 5 seconds, they'll probably want to bend their elbows. Nope, they get a little flick. No, I'm kidding. So I would be focusing on that and really getting those shoulder blades nice and solid. And again, the upward rotation of the scapula and that serratus anterior is really more about the pain that he's getting when he brings it overhead, because quite frankly, those golfers are going to bring their arms overhead because they're thinking about the ball, and then later they're going to pay for it. And you want to get them so they don't have that pain, ideally before they go back to the golf game. But those are some thoughts. Just remember, and you might want to convey this to him, the golf swing is incredibly, creates an incredible amount of force, and it, especially if they miss the ball, which probably he won't, but can really put a lot of stress on those shoulders and such. Make sure his mechanics are good in the shoulder before he goes back. Also make sure he's got lots of flexibility in the trunk, so rotation, side bending, all that stuff. His intercostals are nice and loose and open and strong, and then in his pelvis and especially his hips, because if any of those other areas are not moving the way they should, guess what's taking the extra brunt? His shoulder, and probably his shoulder was taking the brunt when he dislocated it before. if he did it, you know, with golf-related injury. So you want to make sure that you're dispersing that tension and movement as much over the whole body as possible, so there's as little on the shoulders as possible. So it seems completely unrelated to work on getting his hips nice and loosey-goosey and his intercostals nice and mobile, but it really will help his shoulder. So, okay, let's see. Do I have time for another? I think so. Okay. I have a client who's about 75 years old. She has had two knee replacements and one hip replacement. She's the one who tried the prolotherapy for the bursitis in her left hip. It hasn't worked. She has the hip replacement in her right leg and has trouble lifting her right leg up. Parentheses, weak hip flexor, psoas, question mark. If we're doing standing leg pumps on the chair, she has to use her arms to lift her leg up, or I pull the pedal down for her. The bursitis of the hip is on her left leg, and the pain radiates from the top of the foot up to her hip. That's backwards, I think. Doesn't it usually radiate down? Question mark. She can't do anything kneeling, and she can't lie on her left side because of the bursitis pain. She also has osteo and has had breast cancer in remission, I think. I'm guessing the bursitis is caused by the weakness in her right leg. She's compensating with her left. During hamstring curls in the chair with the slip pedal, her left leg is weaker than her right. I've been working with her on hamstrings and quads, making sure she's noticing the difference between the two. She wants to do homework to help with these things. Her house is two stories, and she has pain going up the stairs. She likes Pilates because it's the only thing that doesn't hurt her joints, but she's getting discouraged. She's hating her body and all the pain it's causing her. I've tried to explain that it takes time to get rid of the bursitis, but it's still hard for her to keep positive. I'd like to give her some homework, but I'm just not sure what. I just tell her to keep on going up the stairs and build her strength. Do you have any ideas? Okay, so I have lots of ideas. First off, it sounds like you're doing a fabulous job of encouraging her and giving her some great insights. I would maybe mention that she looks into something nutritional, okay, because all this itis and the osteo, to me, is a big red flag that she's not getting the nutrition into her body. Whether she's not eating the nutrition or she has something digestive that is blocking it, osteoporosis a lot of times can be reversed just with changing eating, not, you know, drugs. And then the bursitis, again, inflammation comes from something. So a lot of times it can be food allergies and such. So looking into some different elimination diets or arthritis or anti-inflammatory diets could be really, really huge. And I say arthritis because, again, it's the same kind of inflammation stuff. Okay, so that's one thing. Second, you said, I keep telling her to go up the stairs and build her strength. If she's having pain going up the stairs, I would tell her to go up the stairs as little as possible, okay? Because what happens is the pain is a signal from your body that something is not right. So in this case, you're irritating the bursitis, and the more it's irritated, the longer it's going to take to get better. So I would encourage her, if at all possible, I don't know her house layout or anything, but you know, maybe she wants to move into the guest bedroom just so she's on the same floor to sleep as she is to eat and stuff. Those kinds of things, so she doesn't have to go upstairs, so she can irritate the bursa less and help it to really decrease. You know, you combine that with some anti-inflammatory things like garlic, ginger, peppers, turmeric. You could really help her in terms of getting that bursa to not be so crazy. In terms of what she needs to work on strength-wise, it sounds like you've got a good fix at it. It sounds like you're right on in terms of weak hip flexors / psoas. I would just have her do something. I mean, this sounds oversimplified, but again, she's 75. Have her sit up in kind of a hard chair, nice and tall, and just lift one knee as high as she can. Okay, without her back moving. So if she can find a hard back chair to kind of slide back against to kind of give her feedback if she's slouching. And again, that's going to be hip flexor. And specifically psoas, because it's going to be from 90 degrees higher. And that's going to be a huge thing in terms of what she's going to mimic on the stairs. And if that hurts, don't do it. Back up and have her do it from a position where she's not in 90 degrees. It's not annoying that bursa. You might want to have her foam roll. And I kind of feel bad saying that. Sweet little 75-year-old making her foam roll. The kneeling, not doing anything kneeling, I don't know, just lets me know she might have some issues with her IT band and such. So this asymmetry that's going on and helping her learn how to lift her leg from the hip and gain that strength could take some pressure off the bursa, and you might want to look at those IT bands and such with that. Anyways, those are some thoughts. Again, it's so hard to see like where any possible asymmetries are without seeing the person, but I can't emphasize enough how much diet can play into some of these things when it seems very straightforward muscle stuff. So hopefully that helps. Okay. I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight because all these questions, well, they're so good. They were kind of long, and I want to make sure that I have adequate amount of time to spend on them. So if you didn't get your question answered this week, I am keeping it in the file, and it will get answered and addressed next week or later. Please let me know if something is urgent in terms of clients. You need to get back to them and such. You know what? I think I do have one more quick question that I found here. Okay. She wrote, do you think the MindBody software would be beneficial for a studio with only one instructor? I have no idea the cost of the program, so that could nix it right there. I like the ease of MindBody, clients able to schedule themselves and being able to log in if they forget their names. I also like that clients must prepay for their sessions. It feels like it would be easier to enforce the cancellation policy. Thank you for your thoughts. Well, honestly, I would say no. I don't think it would be worth the cost. I think over $100 a month. It depends on how many clients you have and how you're using it. And there's a setup fee and stuff. So don't quote me on any of those numbers. Larry does that stuff. But it is nice that clients can schedule themselves and log in if they forget their times. But with only one instructor, the real beauty of all the stuff you can do on MindBody, you're not even going to touch it. I would get something like Outlook and, you know, schedule, you know, them and, you know, you can do recurring stuff. It's so much simpler and you could get it. You know, there's freeware versions of Outlook online for free and no big deal. Yes, they can't log in if they forget their times, but you can make them a little card. Ideally, the best thing to do for that is just have them on a recurring basis. If you're really worried about somebody that has changed their time for whatever reason, give them a call the night before. If it's only one instructor, one set of clients, that kind of stuff is doable. It's like, you know, at our studio where there's 20 instructors, you can't do that for every client kind of a thing. I wouldn't call them every week unless they're that type of client. But, you know, if something's particularly unusual. You said you like that clients must prepay. They don't have to prepay for MindBody. That's a setting that you can choose to turn on or off. And obviously, the client doesn't know that. But I recommend you should not book lessons for a client unless they've prepaid. So you can do that without having to have MindBody. Just say, you know what, I can't put that in the calendar unless it's prepaid. You know, they don't know that your scheduling software is Outlook versus MindBody. They don't know that it doesn't work that way. You know, whatever. If you have them on a recurring system, like, for example, we have in MindBody, they can't use the session unless they've paid, but they can still book it. And then you wrote, it feels like it'd be easier to enforce the cancellation policy. Well, you would think that. So if they have to prepay for their sessions, it's like they've already paid, so you already have the money and you've already collected on it. But here's the kicker. You'll get clients every time, whether you have MindBody or not, that are going to say, no, I shouldn't have to pay for that. I should have one more lesson in my package the next time they come up to pay. And they'll still argue with you. So it really comes down, if you are managing your own business, that you need to have a very firm, very clear, very fair cancellation policy, and you really have to stick with it. And that's the key. We have a, I think it's in our bonus section, a thing on cancellation policy that Larry put together, and it's awesome. We have worked on this over the years, And it's always the hard part because people don't want to pay for what they're not using, but yet they're using your time if they've booked that and they're not going to use it. And even though your kid's sick, you know, you still lost that time. You can't regain that. And it's people don't get that. You can always, always tell somebody that has been in the service industry where time was, you know, what was booked, like a hairdresser or something, and somebody that has not by the way they handle the cancellation policy. I have had people that have been in the service industry like that time after time call and say, I'm so sorry, I have to cancel. Oh, please charge me. Don't, you know, think of not charging me. I'm like, thank you. What a blessing. Okay, so let's just remember to do that to other Pilates instructors and other service people as well. But, you know, this is the one thing. This is the hard part. This is one of the things about owning a studio or running your own business that is tricky. And I tell our instructors time and time again, they don't understand and appreciate how they have it at our studio because they don't have to do the scheduling. They don't have to do the cancellation and money collection part of it because that is a yucky part. I've never met anyone that likes that. It's not fun. And it's really good to be firm and upfront with people and consistent. Okay, so make sure that just because it's your mom, you know, you get my idea. It's really important that you're consistent. So I hope that answers your question. I don't think that as one client or one instructor it would be very advantageous to you because you probably wouldn't be utilizing all the robustness and the cool things that mind body can do. I think you'd probably better be suited for just getting some freeware and you could do a whole bunch of things on there. The main reason you'd want to do that is to have, you know, tracking things on your client and, you know, where other instructors can look at stuff and different things like that. They've got a lot of cool things. You can have other people, you know, check in with the clients, you know, reserve equipment, all sorts of things like that, again, which doesn't apply to one person working alone. You can do really cool things in Outlook or Outlook-like applications where you can put all your client notes in there and stuff and do just as many cool things. It's just not going to cost you an arm or leg. So until you need it, you might not want to have to fork out the extra money. And, again, then you can charge your clients less. So I hope that answers the question. And I hope you guys are inspired to ask some more questions and send them in for next week. I missed you guys, and I hope that you had a nice little spring vacation there. So good night, and I want to remind you to inspire your clients and let them know that everybody deserves to enjoy movement.